Welcome, everyone. I'm here with James Hankins, and we're going to talk about the Hankins Hexagon. Is that right?
That is right.
I am so excited. This is like a breakthrough for me. I was just over the top about this article, and I think this maybe could replace Maslow's hierarchy, which of course was totally false. Maslow faked his data. I'm not saying James's is false, but but let's get rid of that stupid triangle and get the hexagon into the business schools, because this is revolutionary. So James, let's hear about how did you come to this point in your career to be this brilliant?
Luck, absolutely. Very, very lucky. It's a funny story, funny gestation of this kind of hexagon. Like many people, I took redundancy back in kind of the summer, and it freed me up to publish some of the stuff that I'd been working on the side, my hustle, as it were. And one of those things was a new model for the path to purchase, which I tongue-in-cheek called the Hankins Hexagon. And
that's a good name, if you ask me.
Nice bit of alliteration. I think it must have been February. I had worked on a few bits of client business and was becoming more and more frustrated with the funnel, as it were. People talking about, well, you know, we'll get 50% or be aware of our product, and we'll convert that into 30%. Consideration and 20% will then go through to purchase, and I just thought, oh, this isn't how it works. And there have been all these other models that have come through. McKinsey have had a go, Accenture have had a go, and I wrote out a history of the path to purchase, I've been gestating this idea around a hexagon or a pentagon, actually, originally, getting into my devil worship. And that was the kind of sign off, was that all these models have got something wrong with them. They don't replicate or represent what happens in real life, which is chaos, essentially.
Chaos, as Google says. And I really like that you quoted them, the messy middle. Yeah,
the messy middle.
That's another article I reviewed, yeah.
And so I posited that actually it was more like the Pentagon, and evolved it into the hexagon because of the fluidity of this model. Whilst I think the hexagon works particularly well and includes those kind of nodes, those moments that are fairly common across B2C and B2B.
Yeah, let me see if I can get this right. The idea of the funnel is that we have an initial awareness, we have lots of people. Some people credited me with inventing it back in 1981, actually, and in a model called integrated marketing. And so what we did was we used low cost advertising, and it was started in business to business, where I think it has maybe more purchase than in consumer. But so we used low priced magazine ads or media ads to generate lots of leads. And that was not uncommon, but these leads were generated and were given right to a sales force. And the sales force said, these are garbage, you know, because they would call 9 or 10 of them and only one had any value at all. Now, a 10% value on a lead program is not that terrible, right?
Yeah.
But it was terrible for them. So what we needed was a different category of a sieve in there, a filter. And so we hired telemarketing people, and we said, okay, so first we'll generate low cost leads, and then we'll qualify those leads, and we'll throw out the ones that make no sense. And some of them are just not ready. There's nothing wrong with them. They have high potential, but they're just not ready. And so we'll build a system that follows up with them or sends them more literature or does all those things that to cultivate them and sets a follow-up to to talk to them again. And then eventually some of them would drop through, and only then would they get to the field sales. And so there was an incredibly effective system at the time. But it is, you know, that was basically before you could come online and look up everything you could ever find out about our company, right?
Yeah.
And all the rest of the messiness. It's actually gotten much, much worse these days. Now you said, and I also like, because when I first envisioned the World Wide Web, I kind of thought of it this way.
Yeah.
People could take any path they wanted. Now, the irony is very few websites actually let you do that. They don't interconnect in a web. They interconnect in linear menus or scrolls, where you have to scroll endlessly to find what you want, and you can't ever find what you want because there's only one path to any piece of information. So I like what you had to say, because it more reflects what I envisioned out of the web when I first heard about it. But again, nobody builds them that way. They should, but they don't.
Well, yeah, I think that's where the interesting metaphor of the pinball metaphor kind of came in as well.
That. Yes, that's wonderful. And so each of those nodes is like, one is awareness and one is competitive, looking at competitors. Could you give us those six nodes?
There's one of them is passive assimilation. That's kind of when you're out of market at all, then you're living your life, and most categories, most of the time, that is where you sit. Then there's quite often a trigger of some sort. Okay. There's active evaluation or long listing, where you're kind of scanning the market, and then there's kind of direct comparison or shortlisting. Then there's purchase, and then there's post-purchase.
Okay, so they do kind of go, at least the way you've described them, they go around in a clockwise manner. I have your diagram up on the screen, if people can see it.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, that's literally how I've just kind of gone around the face of the clock there. Okay. Now, if you think about it, kind of, there are some categories where you literally won't go through some of those stages. You may be kind of out of market, and there may be a trigger, but then you may go straight to purchase. You may ignore active evaluation and comparison, in which case that's absolutely fine. But if you were going through a linear funnel, that wouldn't take that into consideration. And the messy middle from Google would just ignore it totally.
You can go back and forth too. That was a point you made, and I really liked that too.
Yep, you can go kind of back and forth. You may go into kind of trigger, and then you go into shortlisting. But actually, when you investigate something, you discover that actually there's nothing for you, and you might go back out into longlisting or active evaluation, and kind of scan the market again, and then you may disappear. Then you may go back into passive assimilation. You may not purchase at all, and this acknowledges that complexity. It kind of almost choose your own adventure, if you remember those books, which is how people behave in real life. They don't just go through the routes that you tell them they must go through. They choose their own path, and that was what this model is an attempt to do. And there is mathematics or theoretical mathematics behind it as well. I understand the concept of a Markov chain would help explain or place probabilities along these lines.
Yes, I like that too. Have you actually executed that with any clients?
So that's kind of next steps. I'm working with a couple of clients and companies at the moment around that, and I've been speaking to a number of statisticians, mathematicians about it. So kind of applying the theory and turning it into a reality, and how that could be used to kind of for everyone out there to develop a new model. Because in reality, as I say in the paper, there will be common paths.
And yes, I like those that common, especially.
Those common paths will be the most important paths. They will be the ones that most people walk. And that's where the normal distribution, the bell curve comes in, because that again is the mathematical proof behind what is likely to be the outcome of a real life model of this. None of this, I think.
And actually, I was thinking we could actually assign dollar values too to the pathways.
Yeah, you could.
And then you can allocate resources based on that.
Exactly that. And what is marketing but the allocation of scarce resources? It feels as though it should have been done before.
Well, like I said, Ritson would know that better than I would. You know, he's always bringing up, you know, where did this come from and where's the history of it? So, you know, he may say, oh, you just stole this from Isaac Newton or somewhere, you know.
Maybe. You know? I've had a few academics contact me as well and discuss its practicality. So there are some people who are well respected by Mark who haven't come with a challenge yet.
Well, I learned early on in my career that if you got an academic excited about an idea and they were trying to get tenure, they would write up the whole article for you and you could put your name on it.
Well, there are two other academics that are using one that's using this in his upcoming semester, and another who is using my paper on the history of the path to purchase with his students.
Now, another thing that occurred to me when I talked about this, so I wanted to run this by you, but we don't chart the pathway to decision, because in direct mail we don't know the pathway generally. You know, and we don't care that much either. We can isolate the causal impact, you know, by holdout tests and by other methodologies, which gives us a leg up on digital. But after that, we just look at, okay, how much money do we make? And then we assign, and then in the modeling that we do, that I do, we assign we evaluate independent variables. So it's kind of similar, but it's not, you know, through time. We've taken out the time element and just taken out the different independent variables, and we generate a profitability based on that. And I thought, you know, this could almost be a three-dimensional idea. I'll put myself back on the screen because I get crazy on this stuff. A three-dimensional, like what is that? There was that puzzle that people used to, you know, the ball was in the side and it had all those all those wooden sticks and string and everything. I don't remember what that's called, but boy, that's almost a picture. If we thought about the variables that might come into play on particular nodes that could influence the movement one direction or another, like the ping pong ball pinball metaphor with the flippers.
Exactly that. I was talking to an ex-colleague last week about how you could align kind of different marketing channels or tactics against each one of these kind of nodes. And if you've got a base probability model, you can then test that going forward. Does changing the landing page affect the probability that someone will then move through? Does changing DM drop 3 have an effect on the shift from comparison to purchase? That's where it becomes very, very practical very, very quickly. But I suppose what you've got to have is a baseline model of probabilities to begin with, upon which to test.
Right. And these days, everyone wants to change everything all at once and not keep anything isolated. And so we never know what really mattered at the end.
Exactly that. And I like what you said then about kind of not knowing about the internal kind of workings, just knowing that your action has impacted upon something, but not knowing exactly the cause of that, because that's the basis of neural networks, kind of.
Yes.
Kind of up what is it, forward and backward propagation, and kind of is that messy middle again,
but
in the middle.
Trouble is then you still don't have a control knob for the thing.
This is very, very, very true. It's a tough old world out there, isn't it, when you start talking.
It is messy, but I really, really like this. I really like this model. As I said, there are places where the funnel does work, but I think the idea that we can, you know, that was in a pre-consumer world where we controlled the information flow. And there's something for Ritza to talk about. It was a pre, I'll send him this. It was a pre-consumer world where we controlled the information flow. Now it's a consumer, you know, it's a consumer world where they control the information flow, and that actually drives this whole process. And so then our control is not, it's not about the information. It's about, how can we prioritize our influence over the messy middle?
Yeah.
And it at least breaks it down into something logical. So I really, really like this. It's breakthrough, I think, James. It's
breakthrough. Well, let's hope, I suppose, in the next coming months that my discussions with various people turn something around. It is eminently possible. Everyone has been very, very positive about it so far. So I am hopeful, because then that's something new to the world that could be practically applied.
Well, I hope you'll keep us posted. What do you think would be a good client for you? What, if you could pick your dream application partner for this, what would you be looking for?
Oh, good question. I mean, it in order to encapsulate kind of all the nodes, most of the time, I think it needs to be quite a kind of a deep process. So a lot of financial processes, a lot of kind of SaaS, I quite like software as service businesses. There's a richness of the kind of the ecosystem. So I'd say working on one of those would probably, with this, would be really interesting. Flip side being, actually, sounds a bit counterintuitive, and I use the example of milk in the paper, but it would be something like FMCG, because there's so much that we think we know, and I wonder whether it's true.
Well, I keep trying to explain to people that because male generates a labeled data set and we can isolate well different random populations, because we do still control the information flow to a small extent, that we have the capability to do more of this control because we can isolate the variables. My background, by the way, is philosophy of science. I have an MA in epistemology, which is helpful in marketing, since no one cares about it knowing anything for sure. They just want to make up stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of the problem, isn't it? But it opens the door for people like you and I, hopefully.
Well, I would love to work with you on this. I have to try and think. You know, I've always told the story, because digital is so trigger-oriented, you know. And, you know, I was in junk mail. And so people talk about, you know, oh, all the mail I get is junk mail. And I said, you know, I just got something from a car dealership, and it's totally irrelevant to me. So it goes right in the trash. It's junk mail. And then the check engine light comes on my vehicle, and all of a sudden the relevance changes 180 degrees. And the truth is that we can't even predict ourselves, for heaven's sakes, much less predict each other with the limited context. You know, even if we do have big data, we don't have any context, and we don't know what correlations are spurious, which aren't. So, yeah, it's we're looking for clients that want to know for sure, and that's a tough thing to find.
And clients that will embrace a test and learn kind of methodology, because some clients aren't willing to risk it.
No.
Because there is risk in that, isn't there, of testing and failing. But if you learn, it's not failure, really.
Right. So you don't fail utterly.
Utterly. But that's about managing risk, isn't it? So, right. Yeah.
Well, I think we've given people something to chew on, and as I said, I want to keep in touch, and I want you to get those academics to write up this in a journal, because it belongs there, and I'm going to send this specifically to Ritson and make him tagged in it, because we're talking about him anyway, but I would love to see you two work together, because it's just, I almost always am blown away by his work in Marketing Week or whatever, and I think you topped him. And so I was really you got me going here, and
very kind.
And he was maligning the funnel a couple of months ago anyway, so it followed along really well.
Thank you very much. No, well, definitely.
Have a great evening. I hope I didn't keep you up past your bedtime.
No, it's absolutely fine. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm assuming people can reach out to you on LinkedIn. That's where we've connected up. Is that a good way to reach you?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn and JCP Hankins on Twitter. And my blog is the eqplanner.wordpress.com.
Okay.
For places where I pontificate and publish.
Or they can always write me, john@wdma.org. That's easy. I'll find you.
You'll find me. Excellent.
Okay, thanks for the time. It was really a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
See ya.